Hi, it's Susan Montanaro. In an encore play, I wanted to share this episode from last year. Kim Davis and I hit record as we openly discussed what it was like to be raised by violent and likely mentally ill fathers. We didn't hold back, describing different moments in our childhood that held a good amount of fear. We were also amazed at how similar our stories were and are at any given moment. The importance here is to know that if you can relate, you're not alone. And if this does not describe your experience in life at all, then understanding that we warriors are your neighbors, friends, and coworkers, and it's super important. Everyone has a story, and many of us have scars and trauma, but we're all just trying to have a good life together. I'm Susan Montanaro, and you're listening to Dreams and Detours, a show about the life we plan to have versus the one we're living, for better or not. Everybody has a story, and I believe we find ourselves in each other's stories. Hi, it's Susan Montanaro. This week's episode of Dreams and Detours is a little bit different, mostly in format, but also in the nature of this sensitive content. I had the chance to record part of my conversation with my new friend, Kim Davis. She's an artist, teacher, wife, mother, and like me, a daughter raised by a deeply disturbed and violent father. She and I were introduced mostly because our histories are so alike that it was startling. You'll see that at different moments, we almost have nervous laughter, recalling past events in both of our lives. Also like me, Kim shares the way that emotional abuse and the fears instilled in her younger self have seeded anger and distrust and the path forward to healing all parts of ourselves. We use adult language and get specific at times about our pain, so just be warned in advance. I hope no one finds themselves in these particular stories. However, I'd be foolish to think that Kim and I are alone. Please welcome Kim Davis.
I masked my life forever. It wasn't that people that who knew me didn't know about me. One of the funny things when I was, I don't know, maybe young teenage years, maybe even 11, 12, I remember my father used to say things like, don't air your dirty laundry. Maybe he heard one of us saying something,
right,
you know, to a friend or a relative. But he used to make that comment about don't air your dirty laundry. I don't even think I understood what it meant at first. But when I did learn and understand what it meant, I thought to myself, because I knew I stood outside the parameters
right,
of
right.
them, I said to myself, bullshit. I'm going to tell everybody. I'm not holding on to this crazy stuff that's going on in this family. I'm telling everybody what a crazy person he is and what a violent, insane person he is. I'm not holding back. And I thought right then and there, oh no, I may not have the words and the language to understand what's truly happening. And I may not know who to talk to or what to really say. But I knew for sure that I was not taking direction from a crazy person anymore. And I was not hiding my truth anymore.
And, exactly.
And so did that you was ever, the start of it.
Did you ever wonder? Because I, you know, that was something that I heard as well growing up. It was, you know, you just didn't discuss your business. People outside of that nuclear family didn't know. And I used to wonder if his part of, you know, him saying that was because he knew that on some visceral level that there was something very wrong with this. And you don't want people to know when you're behaving so well. I don't know that he cared, but...
Well, in one vein, he probably didn't care, right? And in
right.
the other vein, he didn't really, but don't spread the word.
Right, right.
I mean, I don't know. My father was a very, well, you know, doctors later, as I would go through therapy, and I've heard this in a lot of different places, would consider him to be a sociopath.
Right.
And someone who, you know, definitely narcissistic and didn't make sense of things. Lots of paranoia in there. Lots of uncertainty, lots of fly by the seat of your pants in a bad way, not in
right.
a good way.
It was not a positive.
No, definitely not. So I think that part of that is like, yeah, they're bigger than life and they're on their own high. And then the other part of it is, don't you dare shame me or badmouth me. Yeah. It's that other ego that comes, you know, the ego that comes out and suggests, you know, don't you dare. Like, they're control freaks.
Right.
So,
right.
So they're going to control the narrative.
Right. Right. Exactly. I mean, the interesting, my father had a lot of friends and he had a lot of people.
Really?
Yes.
That's fascinating.
He had a lot of friends and people adored him.
Charming then.
Oh, I mean, he was as charming could be. And people would think he was so wonderful. And I guess there were aspects of him that that were wonderful. I mean, he was a good friend. He was, you know, kind to his friends. But he was awful to his family.
Was he possessive of friends, or was it like very carefree in those circles?
You know, it's hard to really say. Mm. I remember that he would always be going out and always having friends, and we was always dressed up like these two little girls that would look adorable, and we would, you know, have to always present ourselves like, you know, these little princesses.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go to dinner and we would visit, you know, various friends of his, and they would all just be, oh, you're so amazing. Oh, you're such a
good father. Be seen and not heard.
Right, right. And it was just always fascinating. Yeah. It was always fascinating to me that he would have all these friends and that they did not know what a freak show was going on in our household.
Right.
And it was sort of mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm. I hear that. We had a very similar situation. My father didn't have a lot of friends. They were always acquaintances. That was like
right.
the big word that he would use. But people would randomly show up on a Saturday or a Sunday morning early with bagels and Danish. They were my quote-unquote uncles. And, you know, then we had company suddenly on a Sunday morning, and it was like these people were in my house.
Right. Right.
And so I don't really know who these people were. Characters, you know, now I obviously can look back and say, oh, these were characters that he engaged with on some scale, you know, business scale. But it was strange. He didn't, he always charming.
Yeah.
Showed the world that, you know, the face he wanted to see, and we were four of us growing up, eventually five, but four
right.
of us growing up, and it was the same thing. Look good, be polite, impeccable dinner manners and table manners, because he, well, would browbeat us into that submission of behaving. And, you know, he would say, you know, don't speak unless you're spoken to. Don't touch anything. The food's for the company. You know, that sort of
yeah.
behavior.
I remember I was having a conversation with my older sister, and she was a little girl when our father and her mother
mm-hmm.
Separated, and I remember her. We was having a conversation, and she, and I just kind of shared with her some of the abuse, some of the craziness that had occurred, and she was in shock. She
was this when you were younger, or this is when you're an adult?
I was an adult.
Okay.
She. It was interesting because she had sort of this view that here my father was with this woman, and he had these two adorable little girls, and that we were princesses and living the, you know, the good
life.
She's
probably jealous.
Yeah, well,
on some scale.
I'm sure, you know, because you think of why did my father abandon me, or why did my parents not stay together? And then, you know, he went off and he seemingly had this new family.
Right.
And I had said to her, you have no idea. You have no idea. I remember not going a day without living in fear.
Right.
Without feeling just the heaviness of the household, just feel like it was going to implode
right.
when I would hear his footsteps come up that door.
How old were you when that first started to happen? Like, is it go back all the way back to like your first memories of being a kid? Or was there a point in time where this switch occurred in him and he became this more fearful and abrasive kind
of
father?
Well, the interesting thing was that his abuse towards me really didn't start to happen until I was maybe a tween.
Okay.
Use the,
well, what was the climate in the household before that time?
Well, the climate of the household was he was out a lot of the time because he was with other women.
Right.
And would have girlfriends, and he right. would come home, and he would be gone for days at a time. And I have these memories of my mother crying
right.
because he wasn't home, and he hadn't been
she
home
knew.
In days.
She knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he wasn't so much of a brutal person at those earlier stages, or when he came home, was he like crazy, or was
well,
he
well, in that
aggressive?
Time, he wasn't crazy necessarily. I mean, he... You know, it seemed that he had, when he was having this double life, he was fine, at
okay.
least in terms of being able to go out
mm-hmm.
and have women and
right.
then come back home and play whatever game that was.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I mean, there were times, because oddly enough, when I was a little girl, I was very, very close to my father. I was daddy's girl.
Mm-hmm.
And he would take me with him sometimes to some of these...
outings.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So I would always end up with him and a woman he was seeing.
Right.
My earliest childhood memory is being in a car with a woman that I knew he... was romantic with,
wow.
to use a polite
And was
term.
That just sort of like something you knew and you didn't say anything and you just, you know, kept quiet? Or what? Or like,
well,
did you feel like badly, or how did that leave you?
Well, the funny thing was that he was in and out during that time so much that he didn't even realize I could talk. And I went home and told my mother.
Oh, boy.
Everything.
Right. Yeah.
And he didn't even realize that
Never
I had the vocabulary.
Never underestimate the brilliancy
exactly.
of a child.
Exactly.
Right.
So I essentially outed him.
Okay.
And he, I think, didn't take me out as much.
Right. All of a sudden it was like, oh, okay.
Right. Exactly.
She knows what's going on.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I mean, I think the thing with him was that he... for him, the abuse, I think when he started to feel not in control, particularly of me, of my sister, of us as children, was when we started to emerge as young women.
Yeah.
When it became clear that we were growing up.
Right.
That we,
attractive to the world.
Right, exactly.
To men, to women, to whomever, but the world was now,
right.
you know,
exactly.
illuminated for you and for...
Exactly.
Everyone around you.
Exactly.
Right.
So right. the second that it seemed that I was paying any attention to how I looked,
right.
I would get berated and called names, called whore, slut, you're this, you're that. Just immediately just shoot that down.
So all of a sudden, it was like almost felt probably overnight. Suddenly it went from a father who was in and out, not always around. And,
right.
you know, it was what it was, to a father who was far more present and... saying all of these horrible, mean, derogatory things to you. And so that must have felt like you were blindsided.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like suddenly just getting smacked across the face, in essence.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing, too, is he was very... He would make sure we had nice Christmases, for example. He would go out. He would get the tree. He would do all those little things that you're like, oh, that's
That he always
sweet.
Did.
Right.
That he always did.
Right.
But suddenly now... Like, how long did it take from the time he sort of snapped, if you will, to your seeing and understanding the pattern that was being put in place? And, like, so the first Christmas, when things were going crazy, did you trust the Christmas was going to, like, pave a road or showcase a better side of him? Or, like, at what point did his behavior convince you that this was never going to feel safe again with him, or that you were, that was it, that this was the way things were going to be, I guess?
Well, I'll tell you, I always knew that something was off. I never
okay.
liked the way he treated my mother.
Okay. Because see, for you, this came up suddenly for you at a very specific time. Whereas in my life, this is from the time I'm born. So
right.
it's the only way and
right.
only version of my
right.
father that I knew, for him to be violent, for him to be emotionally and, well, physically abusive to a certain point. Believe it or not, after a certain point, his physical violence was very far and few between.
Right.
But the emotional,
yes, that's the,
right,
yeah,
was already established.
Yes.
So he actually didn't have to do anything physically because we were already, like, you know,
afraid. You lived in that.
Absolutely petrified.
That fear.
We were beyond afraid. We were traumatized into, yeah, submission on a daily basis. So it was a game changer. He didn't have to do much to,
right, right.
You
when
know,
you've established,
right,
that.
But in your case, that's not how it really went. A little bit maybe, but so now all of a sudden you've got holidays coming. He's back in the house a little more often. And did you even trust that things were going to be merry or even pleasant?
You never knew what she was going to get with,
yeah,
him. You know, so much of my life was, my adult life was trying to process what occurred and how not to integrate that madness into my own life. Because he would literally, everything would be fine and he would be okay. And he would be even sweet. But then something would happen, nothing that you could even say, oh, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly he would morph into this monster.
Mm.
Suddenly he would be calling us names. Suddenly he would be chasing my mother around the house with an axe. I mean, I have a very vivid memory of walking in the bathroom and seeing her blood-soaked shirt in the sink.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, these were just, even to the point where you're not even shocked by it anymore, because it was just like, okay, he's at it again, and you just kind of run for cover, and you just try to pretend like, all right, you know what, this will be over.
Did you physically run for cover? Like, did he physically harm you, or was he taking it out on your mom?
He was
mostly
taking it out on my mom, but
okay.
he was physically abusive, I would say more so to me than my sister.
Okay.
Again, that physical abuse didn't come until I was, again, emerging as a
young woman.
Right.
Yeah.
Then he would beat me with the belt. He would collar me. He would call me names. Just, it was not that, like, fatherly daughter offering wise counsel. It was always just this fear, like, you understand that I am the boss of you.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was just very clear. And the thing, too, I would always find myself in very bizarre scenarios with him. You know, I have this memory of him and I. And it was just, again, like all these little pieces, because I was still really young. You know, I knew that he was not feeling well, and he was... And the word was that he was poisoned, allegedly, by some woman he was seeing. We was at this home of a girlfriend of his, who he had a daughter with,
mm-hmm.
My younger sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I had fallen asleep on the sofa, and I woke up, and he was fighting with her the way that he would fight with my mother.
Okay.
And the little girl, my sister, was screaming, and I remembered that there was lighting fluid all over. Yeah, like he was chasing her with a lighter.
Oh my gosh.
So I just remembered thinking, oh my God, he is crazy. He's abusive. He's awful. And I'm trapped here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking, why am I here?
Right.
Why did my mother let me leave with him?
Right, right, of course.
What the fuck?
Right, right, of course.
So there was a lot of that, too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of just trying to understand, okay, this isn't right. There's something really wrong here. And I think just knowing, like I knew viscerally, this will not be my reality. This will not be
right.
My life.
Right, right. Well, and also, just the idea that you are, over time, witnessing the extent to which he will go to control or destroy the woman in his immediate view,
yes,
and in his immediate,
exactly,
possession, because that's how he seems to have considered you and your mom,
yes,
and your sisters,
absolutely,
and, right, possessive. lighter fluid, for God's sake, an axe, my goodness. Yeah. You know, those are very strong instruments to destroy.
Yes.
It's not, you know, not that I consider anything else to be acceptable, but we've moved beyond the fist, if you will.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's really scary.
Yeah.
That's really scary.
Yeah. I mean, I remember my mother worked nights and he would pick her up. And I remember I would wake up and literally be in a panic attack because I would be just afraid that he was going to be coming for me.
Right. He was on his way home.
He was on his way home. And you just didn't know what you was going to get.
Yeah.
I mean, there would be times when he would come, he would pull me out of bed and just start to scream and yell and hit. I mean, it and for what?
Right, for nothing.
For nothing.
Right,
I remember nothing. He was harassing me. Because I didn't take my cod liver oil. We were supposed to take a spoonful of cod liver oil every day. And he just decided that this particular day I hadn't. I had.
Right, of course you
but
did.
But it that
in his mind, that was not true.
Right.
Right.
And he pretty much sat me down, called me a liar, and was essentially saying, God doesn't like liars, and you're going to burn in hell, and just on and on like this for hours and hours, literally until he fell asleep.
Till he was done.
Yeah. And I would sit, and I remember I was sitting in the chair, and he was asleep. What was I going to wake him up and go, can I go to bed? I had school the next day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I understand that.
And nobody was like, hey, you know, she does have school tomorrow.
Right, she needs to go to bed now.
Right.
It's like, enough of this.
Right.
Enough of this.
Exactly.
That's the worst part, I guess, is, or one of the, you know, aspects of that would be, even if you were sitting there taking that verbal abuse and that assault, knowing that he's just a lunatic, like separating this notion of truth versus like the falseness of his lunacy.
Right.
You're still absorbing the anger.
Oh.
You're still absorbing what potentially could turn into a physical violent dynamic. So all of the other components of abuse and fear are still present, even if the words are not true and you know they're not true.
Right.
Even if you're sitting there and you're like, okay, just say your piece because I know you have to. Even if you can rationalize the difference between sane and insane, it doesn't change. That's one thing that I think people who have not been in this situation can't know and shouldn't, thankfully, is that it doesn't matter. Once someone instills fear in the home, in you, and they've activated against it just often enough to showcase that it's real and that it's not just, you're punished, and then, of course, there's no punishment. Like there's nothing about it that's false or, you know, an empty threat. It's true, it's real, it's going to happen because it has. And you just, that's the worst thing. You just don't know when it's going to again.
You don't.
Like I've told you once before, I think that I could have spilled milk one night
and
it gets cleaned up, and I could spill milk on another night and I would literally get smacked off my chair. Like, I mean, I'm a young child.
Yes.
Smacked off
yes.
my chair because that was the worst thing I could have ever done. You know, it was always finish your food.
Right.
And I remember as I was under six, so maybe it was 4 or 5 years old, I remember being strapped to the dining chair, the only one left. My siblings were showered, bathed or whatever, sent to bed. And because I hadn't finished my food, I was strapped to the dining chair to wait because he was demonstrating power and control. You're going to finish your food.
Right.
And I fell asleep strapped to a dining chair. You know, because it was like little and it was late.
Right.
I need to go to
sleep. Right, exactly. So you're going to...
Yeah. So, I mean, I understand that idea of like instilling or of, having to bear the brunt of someone's insanity. And they need to control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was always very fascinating to me how he, like my father, it was even understood at my school that he... I think we had had this conversation about when a boy had called my house and my father went completely apeshit.
Yes.
Completely apeshit.
Yes.
I think I may have been 13, maybe 14.
Yes.
And he, again, with the name calling, berated me, kept me up all night, took me to school the next morning, went to the administrator's office and the principal's office, and literally threatened that if that boy ever called his house again, he was going to stomp that boy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now I think back, I'm like, why wasn't he escorted out by security?
Well, why didn't someone call the police?
Why didn't somebody call ACS?
Exactly. I mean, because this was the 70s, and that's not what happened,
that's
sadly.
Right.
So
that's
that, right. You know, that happened to me. Well, this is like actually the early 80s, right? For
right.
us, it's probably
right.
now the early 80s. But it
right.
felt the same.
It did. It really
Nothing
did.
Nothing felt like it changed enough in the world in terms of what could happen or how much interference we could get from the outside world, especially, you know, if you're growing up in a moderately decent community where there's either things that are worse or most of it's not so bad.
Right.
You know, it's not a lot of that, like, let me barge in and help the kid.
Right.
But the same thing happened to me, 13 years old, some boy, and I don't remember the details of it, of course. I don't know who it was, whatever. Someone called my house, asked for me, and politely.
Right.
I remember
right.
learning that much occurred, like, you know, a very polite ask for. And it was like a screaming fit on the phone of, don't you ever call this house again. And then I just got taken down.
Right,
that.
Right.
I was,
it was your
slut,
fault. Of course.
And I was a piece of this and a piece of that. And it was this horrible aftermath of getting beaten down and beaten up by the father I had because
right.
it must have been me that provoked it.
Right,
I must be up
it.
To no good.
You provoked a phone call.
You know, what,
how
what
dare
I think
you?
I was. Yes.
How
yes,
dare you?
That's right.
I mean, it's...
Meanwhile, you know, we have a number that's probably known by
right.
other people. Like,
exactly.
whatever. It could be in the phone book.
Exactly.
I have no idea, but yeah.
Exactly.
right.
I mean, you know...
It's weird how we could sort of like laugh, chuckle nervously, but honestly, I think now, just because, you know... We're thankfully much beyond it, but still.
Right. And you just remember how that made you feel. I mean,
yes.
I remember feeling like a loser. I remember feeling like
shame.
Oh my God.
The shame.
Like,
yeah.
what did I do?
Yeah.
Or
like, you know, just to feel like reduced.
Yeah. That's.
Reduced. Like you weren't allowed to have something like that, or that you were a bad person because someone had interest to
right.
talk to you and it
right.
was friendly. Shame on so many levels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, my father, even in terms of, like, our friendships and even just, like, the neighborhood kids. And I remember there was this one time when the girl next door to me, who was about my age, maybe a year or two older or younger, and she was the daughter of... Pentecostal minister.
Okay.
So they had that was its own thing. She could only wear dresses,
sure,
whatever
sure.
the case may be. And I remember she had knocked on my door and had asked me if I could hold this stuffed animal for her. And I said, okay. And it was a stuffed animal given to her by a boy, and she didn't want her father to see it. And of course, when I was asked about the stuffed animal, my father went crazy and accused me, you'll love this, of being a lesbian. Now I was a lesbian.
Because it was the girl
right.
next door.
Exactly. I mean, it's funny, but it's not.
But the thing is, it's not that it's so wrong to be a lesbian. It's the fact that he said it like it's a dirty thing
oh,
to
yeah.
be.
Oh, no, yeah.
Like
a
it
dirty
was a
thing
wrong,
to, right,
dirty,
exactly.
out of line
oh, yeah,
consideration.
No, absolutely.
Right,
absolutely.
Of course.
It
of
was
course.
Like I was a lesbian and she was in this house, so obviously we were doing things.
Yeah, shame on you.
You know,
right.
I think I was maybe 12.
Right. Right.
And he's accusing me of things. I'm like, I don't even know what that is.
Right. Right.
I don't even know what that is.
Right. Pretty crazy.
No.
It's crazy to be raised by someone who's that insane.
No.
That
and
I know
that,
for sure.
I mean, insane.
Yeah.
Not just a little quirky.
No, no,
but
no.
Out and out insane.
Yeah, well, it changed the entire trajectory of our lives. I know for me, it definitely did. I didn't really think about a future. I always thought
no,
about, so,
no.
you know, you grew up with armor at that point. You're very much armored up and suited up, and everything becomes a function of survival. And so I didn't learn anything in school.
Right. Well,
because it's very hard to learn
right.
when you're like in the middle of like this.
Functioning
like,
on 2 hours sleep.
And
right.
just traumatized on a regular
yeah,
basis.
Yeah.
Very hard to focus.
You can't
and
really
pay attention.
Get a good night's
no,
rest
you can't.
Strapped to a.
That's right. You can't. And so. First, you have that experience, which doesn't, you know, you think that maybe education can hook you up and set you up. But no, if you don't have that, then you don't have that basic foundation for the next steps. In my case, I left at 17. So as soon as I was graduated, I was out the door because I thought, oh, I got to get out of here. Like, you know, it's my life literally depended on it to me.
Absolutely.
And then it was this whole idea that, you know, life continues to happen even while you're carrying the enormous load of the past. And so it's very hard to decipher the load you're carrying and try to like slim it down or deal with it while life is still throwing things at you. So I know for me, dreaming of a future or dreaming of like a family or even getting married and kids, like those things didn't even enter my mind. It wasn't that I didn't want them. I couldn't imagine anything, never mind that. So it was an interesting ride for a long time.
And it's interesting that you bring that up, Susan, because so many of my relationships in my early adulthood was wrought with just drama, abuse.
You were drawn to all the characters who mimicked that behavior?
Okay. Just,
Well, that's definitely greater, you know, chance and propensity to be in that situation that you found yourself in than not. That is for sure.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I would always find myself in these very volatile relationships, very, I would say even violent.
Trust issues.
It was pretty intense.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was very interesting to me was when I had first met my husband.
How old were you around?
I was in my late 20s when I met him.
Okay.
And he was just so unlike anybody I had ever been with. Just in every respect.
Was that an immediate, like, draw and attraction for you?
Not even.
Okay.
It was just kind of like, okay.
Okay.
And he was so nice, and we would date, and I would just kept thinking, well, when is he going to leave? Like, I would look at him, and I'd be like, I can't believe you're still here.
Wow.
And the interesting thing was that I did everything I could to sabotage that relationship. And in hindsight, I realized I was so conditioned to believe that I needed this drama, that there needed to be this sort of
ugly explosiveness.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very interesting because meanwhile, I was still engaged in all kinds of craziness. And I remember at one point, I was seeing this other guy. He actually walked in and saw me with him. And the look on his face.
Your husband walked
in? Yeah, he walked in. I was in a bar with this guy.
Okay.
And, you know, I was flirting. And, and suddenly I see him and he's looking at me and I'm looking at him and I'm like, oh, shit, this was stupid. Because, of course, the bar, like, just to show you, the bar was, like, right around the corner from his house.
Yeah.
So, like, why are you
You
there?
Weren't even, like, trying
Wasn't
to
even,
hide it.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
And it was... It was really funny because, not ha-ha funny, but it was funny because, like, I realized, wow, he was very upset. And I said to him later, when we had talked, I said, you know, I essentially said, I'm not good enough for you. I'm really not good enough for you. You need somebody that's going to be there, that's going to be supportive, that wants what you want.
Did you consider or think of yourself as being damaged, or did you just feel like
totally.
You had a right to be a crazy wild person?
I think I vacillated wildly between the two.
Okay.
I mean, I felt like in a sense I was able to do whatever I want. There's always that aspect as an adult where I'm like, I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want.
Right.
Because I can.
Right.
And this, okay, well,
yeah.
You know.
How much of that is going to destroy then what I potentially have.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember he said to me, he said, you know, you never gave me a chance. And that just stayed with me.
Right.
Like, and so he left and for, I guess, I don't know, it was maybe a couple of months went by.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, I've got to.
Yeah.
I got to get him back.
Yeah.
I've got to call him. We've got to reconnect.
Yeah.
And, I realized that I was worthy of being in a loving, trusting,
kind
relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing about my husband, I have to say, Susan. He is the kindest person I've ever met in my life.
You deserve to be shown kindness and compassion.
Yeah. I mean,
and bravo to you for recognizing it, even in the middle of your chaotic behavior And bravo to you for going back and dialing him and asking him for that opportunity and chance, because you understood, and even though you might not have been able to figure all of it out in that one night and moment, collectively you recognized something and thought, no, I want more of that.
Yeah. No, but that's the thing. I want more of this yes. loving tenderness, yes. this sweetness, consistently and always.
Right.
Not just occasionally.
Well, not in a selfish, demeaning
right.
way.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so funny, Susan. He had called my mother, mm-hmm. like right after he had seen me in the bar with this guy. And I remember when I spoke to my mother, she goes, "You are your father's daughter. You are you." And I remember how that stung.
Oh, it must have hurt.
And I was like, oh my God.
Like, because you knew when you saw it, you're like, oh, I'm never going to be that.
Yeah.
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 And I thought, wow, it was just really mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And he, and I'll tell you, it has not been easy. It has not been, well, we got together and we married and lived happily ever after. I mean,
the life even between two people who don't have that kind of
exactly.
Chaotic history, there are struggles and there are challenges in relationships.
Yes.
And so, yes, add in a few extra items and components that make it a bit more difficult or challenging in
yes.
terms of like the emotional parts of the structure.
Yes.
And yeah, sure, that can come up. But to think that others aren't experiencing something
right
as well,
right?
You know, everyone has that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So did you seek out counseling for yourself or counseling for the both of you to harness and ensure that some patterns wouldn't be repeated, or to like find a pathway that was manageable for you so that you could create your own loving relationship? Or did you just do the feel and touch go of, of how you guys are just going to travel and be together on your own?
We started, I think the issues started to come up, and I one of the things that, and this, I became very angry. Mm-hmm. I have all this anger inside of me, and I would just
lash out.
I would just lash out mm-hmm. because the last thing I wanted to do was be abused. So I had to make it clear, I will not be abused. You will not do to me. You will not, I will not.
Even without
it.
Any like suggestion that
no.
it was happening,
no.
you almost had to
preemptively,
right. by the way, right. even if you have any sick, crazy thoughts,
right. if you think,
I'm going to make sure that I have created such a, a distinction between what you are and are not allowed to do here so that you don't even, which is part of our own craziness
right.
that we carry,
exactly.
right? It's like marking
exactly.
a territory and marking this line in the sand, if you will, that suggests don't even look at the line, never mind dream of crossing.
Exactly. Exactly. No, you're absolutely right.
Right.
And
it's a wall.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And you start to, I would always just respond very angrily,
yeah.
very explosively. Mm-hmm. I would say the most vile, disgusting things. And, I'll be honest when I say it to anybody, if he left me, he would have been completely within his right
yeah.
to be like, yeah, I'm not putting up with this.
Yeah. So what do you think was the reason that he stayed?
Because, honestly, because he was committed to me and committed to us. Mm-hmm. And he really showed me what love looks like in
could
a way
he see
I
it?
Had
do you
never
think he
seen
could
it
see
before.
You? Is that what, I mean, do you think he could see you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was always very patient and always very kind. I mean, it's interesting because now one of the things that we're sort of butting heads is over our teenage daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And, I have to remind myself, okay, you know what? I can't be angry at him for extending the same patient kindness to our daughter that he extended to me.
What do you want him to do? Turn into your father?
Right, exactly.
Now she's a teenager, so he should snap on her.
Exactly.
And he should all of a sudden
exactly.
pull this like new
exactly.
new version of himself out of the his pocket and behave. I know that you have mindfulness to be cautious at this particular tender time with your daughter.
Yes.
Because that is reminiscent of what you experienced at this
Absolutely.
Particular right
Absolutely.
Moment.
Absolutely.
And that's a lot. And that's a lot. Well, thank goodness that he is showing the same kindness and compassion, because that's setting the stage for what you actually were just as entitled and deserving of. And just because you didn't get it doesn't mean that you didn't deserve it.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that I've had to reconcile, and no doubt you've had to reconcile,
yes.
is just because it was ugly and just because it was demeaning and shameful doesn't mean that we deserved for it to be that way. It just means that that's what happened, and now we have to flip it on its head to say, no, I am all of these great, amazing things. I
right.
do deserve all of this great love and kindness
love.
In return.
I deserve respect.
That's right.
I deserve kindness.
With, you know, we give it to ourselves first, and we receive it from the ones who we've partnered up with.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think it's interesting, too, because, you know, as I've sort of moved ahead and forged this life where I'm in a stable relationship, a happy marriage,
mm-hmm.
not without its whatever that can be, crazy.
Of course.
But, you know, I've been able to sort of think about the why. You know, one of the things that I've always been curious about is, why was my father so angry?
Mm.
Why did he do that? What happened to him?
Right.
And why did my mother, why was she complicit? In,
right.
And why didn't she say enough?
Right. Why didn't she protect you?
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
So I find that I've been thinking a lot about that.
Okay.
That's been something that I've been giving a lot of thought to. And sort of this, what does forgiveness look like to me? What is, you know, before my father died, you know, I'd say we were speaking. We had had an estrangement where I didn't speak to him for about, I think it was 8 years.
Sure.
We had a falling out.
Right.
I think I said something to the effect of, you will never treat me like that again.
Right.
I will fucking kill you before I allow you or anybody to treat me like that. And then we
like, I'm done.
Right, exactly. And I remembered that, you know, and I think I shared a little bit of this with you. We were speaking, but, and that's the thing that I kind of find that's the way I am in all my relationships. You're either in my inner circle or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
I can be polite. I can be nice. We can have an acquaintance. We can be acquaintances. But, like, my father was not at my wedding.
Right.
He didn't walk me down the aisle. There was
right.
no way that was happening.
Right. Well, you know what?
And
that's a big deal, though, because that's a significant moment, and that signifies all the things that you wanted from him that he couldn't give to you.
Right.
So maybe his presence not being there actually allowed you to have it just the way you needed it without the disruption and
right.
the interference.
Right. And but in the meanwhile, I can say I can sympathize with his struggle. Whatever that was in his childhood, I know he grew up in, you know, Jim Crow.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he grew up, you know, as a young black kid, racist, you know, Georgia, the son of a sharecropper,
mm-hmm.
just all of the stuff that I guess could breed that kind of anger. And
sure,
resentment.
Things you and I could never understand.
Exactly,
right.
exactly.
And things, you, quite frankly, your mom could never understand.
Right, exactly,
right.
exactly,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting to me that while I'm able to say, yes, I understand, I can see and understand that anger, and I forgive him. But I was able to forgive him by that. It was healing for me. It didn't mean you're in my life. It didn't mean forgiveness that you are
it wasn't,
a part
of. It didn't mean that it was okay what you
no,
did.
No, exactly.
It just meant that I would like to put this behind me, and
right.
I'd like to do it in a way that's reasonable.
Right.
Not just spewing words.
Right.
But that I am good.
Right.
And so I am going to move on.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, you almost only wish a person like him well.
Right.
Because you are not going to be all of that ugliness. And you, of course, would never wish it on anyone, not even him.
Right.
But it isn't for you to deal with his part. It is for you to deal with you. And so you have to detach from all of that.
Right, exactly.
And that's what your forgiveness
exactly.
really means.
And also because of you know, me realizing too that I needed to focus on my own healing.
For sure.
And I was sorry that he could not heal.
Yeah.
And it is, I feel, through my healing that I don't pass on the generation of abuse and
right.
toxicity and craziness
right.
onto my kid.
That's it.
Or my nephew. Or
that's
that
it.
They're not.
And if it's not, you know, and you know, we, again, something we've talked about, even if it's not through the use of the same negative language
right.
or whatever, we want to make sure our energy is not screaming any of that, because
right.
the energy that,
yes.
that we bring into a room or into a relationship and our families can scream volumes if it's with disgust or distaste towards someone or with judgment.
Yes.
You know, if we can't really love and show up in love, then that's more to inspect, I suppose.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, you start to realize that this is not okay. It's,
yeah.
it's, you know, and that was the thing too. I always knew this was not okay.
That's
I was
right.
never going to be treated this way. I was never going to allow it. And then it's interesting because then my first few relationships were not very
leaning
healthy.
A little more toward that.
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
I'm very grateful. I can say this. I never really had anyone in my romantic space who mimicked my father's behavior at all.
That's,
as a matter of fact, I was so fortunate to meet someone
yes.
at 19 who I stayed with to just about 30, who was so the opposite. He actually probably was so much more like your husband.
Yes.
That
yes.
he was
yes.
kind and he was compassionate and he was funny and he was quirky and he was cultured and he brought a lot of greatness and safety to my space
yes.
and trust
yes.
and
yes.
and just we were buddies, and you know, and I think that also helped matters. And so I've always have said that he saved my life,
right.
even if he didn't
right.
mean to.
Right.
Just out of the pure nature of the timing of my life then, because those years, anything could have happened.
Yes.
Let's face it, I could have met anyone. Very much so. Very much so. And I would have, you know, out of just the sheer notion of wanting to be loved or paid attention to in any way, I could have ended up anywhere. And so I always felt extremely blessed and fortunate for that, without a doubt.
Yeah, no,
without
a doubt. It is a blessing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and kudos to you, kudos to him for knowing and... You
well,
know.
Until I think you and I both can say that that's true. Even with a few stumbles, you know, you were able to get back up and get out of that sooner than later. So
oh
that
yeah, no,
I
was not going to be in a, I guess you could say, a long term relationship with anybody that.
Right.
I think even inside when the drama was playing out, I just mm-hmm. knew that my long term future was not going to look like
yeah.
me being caught up in
right.
this, you know, insanity.
So I'm excited that you were able to get off of that ride. I don't know that everyone that goes through this kind of an upbringing gets that chance. I think you and I are pretty fortunate in that
yes.
way. You know,
yes.
we do great things. You know, you have a great artistic background, and you're currently, you know, you do amazing work in the crafting and teaching zone. And I know for me, I'm using this platform, right, to share and do all sorts
I think
of
it's so great.
Interesting
I think
work.
As we've talked about, it's interesting because I don't know many people that have experienced such violent
right.
backgrounds.
I know. That's why it was
right.
insane when we
I mean,
met. I'm like, wait a minute.
Right.
I almost felt like at the same ages.
We right.
also had these
exactly.
almost identical. Like, and it's so, it's crazy. Like, you and I can laugh about it now and sound almost positive. But like, to get beat down by your father for
right.
the same exact like so-called
right.
crime
to have a boy
thinks,
call like
yes.
each have it when the
I
boy
mean,
called the house
how
story.
Messed up is that like, I have never heard anybody share that. So when you and I first like discovered that some of those like really weird things happened and we both shared it, I was like, wait, what?
I know.
Oh my God. Like, you know, granted, I don't think everyone's grown up in this like unbelievably, you know, cheery.
Right.
I get it. You know,
exactly.
people have stories and hence I want to hear about
they
them.
Do.
But that was too much for me. I was like, wait,
that's,
what?
Yeah.
That's
I mean,
insane.
And I even have said to my husband, I said, no, you don't understand.
Yeah.
I grew up in a home where I lived in fear.
Yes.
And that was that. There was no doubt about it.
No.
We were afraid.
Yeah, working on eggshells on a regular basis.
Yes.
Yeah, so wait. So let's fast forward a little bit because I'm curious to know, are you afraid of anything today?
You know, I will say that whatever I'm afraid of, my goal is to get past it.
Okay.
That's where
okay.
my mindset is.
Because mm-hmm. Like you're a warrior to
yeah.
me. You know what I mean?
Well,
not just
thank
a
you.
You know,
no,
I mean a real warrior. Like you are in charge
and
of
you.
Yeah, yeah. No, I feel like that too.
I mean
I think that's what connects us and binds us even now in our current
absolutely.
Day. And this is why I know like we're gonna hang out, right? We're forever connected.
Exactly.
It's not just because of the past. It's because we have also come to this other side.
Exactly.
And we believe in the fact that we are amazing and that we are worthy and we have value and we're in the driver's seat for our own lives.
Exactly.
So that's super.
It really is. It
yeah.
really is. And to be in a relationship, to be in a marriage,
mm-hmm.
to be with my husband, to know that I'm cherished.
Yes.
To know that
mine's forthcoming still, but that's
right.
okay.
But yeah. But we're a work
yeah,
in progress.
We're good.
We're
good.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you have this going on. This
I do. This
I mean,
platform and the coaching business is super. Yeah.
Right.
And I think it's super just because you know, clearly I've done my work. I've been there and then
yes.
I've done my work. So it's like, you know, it's a true healing and a true survival story, if you want to call it that.
Well,
but,
it is because healing had to happen.
Yeah, it did.
There was no way to
I couldn't be effective with
this.
Anybody
no,
if
no.
I didn't.
There was no way that you was going to go through this.
Yeah.
And be who you are without their having
yeah.
been
yeah,
some
yeah, you can't offer much
healed.
To people if you
right.
don't understand how your
right.
own life has sorted itself
exactly.
out.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, I think it's really super that we are, you know, in charge of our own destiny now and calling our own shots.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's okay that when things come up that become frustrating or that alarm me or hit a trigger because I'm like, you know what, that's all right. This is life.
Right.
This is part of
exactly.
life.
Exactly.
And, you know, everyone has it.
Exactly.
You know.
So you just figure, you know what? Fear. I just feel like if something makes me nervous or scares me, I guess in some ways you could say I'm like a bull because I just...
Head on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I think
just,
that's good.
Yeah. Just
yeah.
like, no, I can't.
We're not invisible anymore.
No.
Right? We do not shrink down.
No, we're not shrinking violence. And you know, I got to tell you, Susan, that's a great gift.
Yeah, it is.
To know that, like...
Yeah. Do you know what I do now? So it's really, you know, it's the thing that you hear people, like speakers do this, and I know actors do this for stage performances, like when you're about to go in front of a crowd, they do the whole, like, the Wonder Woman pose, hands on the hips, or the victory pose.
Right,
up
right,
there.
Right, right.
All of a sudden, like, I always knew that. You know, you hear about it over the years here and there. People will do that and stuff. So, but lately, it's come up again in some books I've read and through some conversations that I've had, and I laugh now, and I actually do the victory pose all the time, and I'm just like, that's right.
That's it.
Winner, you know, and it's just sort of like warrior winner or whatever. And
that's
I make
so
myself
great.
Laugh and it sort of melts whatever's going on.
That's true.
You know,
that's very true.
Yeah, it
and
just kind
you
of
know,
brings it down.
You realize how even through all of this, I know it's helped me to have good relationships.
Yeah.
It's helped me to have such good and wonderful, solid friendships.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you.
Yeah, you flip all the way over
yeah.
the other side.
No, really.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
even my relationship, my adult relationship with my sister, with my siblings.
That's
I mean,
a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean...
That's a big deal because not everyone can come out of that connected. Sometimes
right.
the shame
well,
is too great
is,
and the wounds are too
and,
deep.
And
you
the
know?
Thing is, it's like you each of us had to do the work.
Yeah.
It wasn't
well, yeah,
magic.
They did.
Not everybody does
no,
it.
No, they don't.
But that's what
no,
I
No, they don't. No, they don't.
If you're not doing the work.
It's very hard to reconnect when someone's not
right.
doing the work. And
if they're not doing the work, then you can't be near them.
Yeah, I know.
And that's kind of...
Yeah, I got a little bit of that in my
yeah.
world. Yeah,
no,
yeah it's
I get
unfortunate.
It. I get
unfortunate.
It.
It's unfortunate.
So
but that's okay.
So do I.
Yeah, it happens.
There's some.
You know, there were some definite... there were definitely... parts of the story that sacrifices were made and, you know, people unfortunately suffered. And so those are casualties of this experience.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
And the thing is, too, it's that you become so acutely aware of your own survival.
Yeah.
That you have to do what you have to do.
Yeah.
And if you're doing the work and they're not.
Yeah. It's very hard. It's like any friendship or any relationship, I think, at this point. It's like if we're not all in it and being as open and vulnerable and loving and thoughtful and really aiming toward the same goodness, it's hard to stick around with anybody, I think.
Yeah.
You know, even in relationships,
no,
I've learned that.
Look, I totally get that.
It's certainly the sibling relationships.
Absolutely.
Those are hard.
Those are very hard. Yeah. Very hard.
It's unfortunate.
And it's sad. And, you know, but you realize, I mean, even like the thing that I can say that my husband that I really love is he always is very tempered and very calm in his approach. Mm-hmm. So the house never feels like it's being haunted by anger.
Right. You don't have to go through every day and clear it out with sage.
No. If anything, I have to do because I'm the one going.
Oh, my gosh. No, that's fantastic.
I think it's really awesome that we're talking about this.
For sure. For sure. Because, I mean, you know, so for me, like, I know it was haunting. Even though I'd worked through chapters, I always looked at it as being like sort of segments and chapters. And I'd worked through and, okay, this doesn't really bother me anymore. And I kind of see it for what it is. Okay, fine. You know, I can manage that. And they were always like sectioned off. But it took me until like in the last, I'd say, half dozen years to really get to the end of that stuff where I could talk about it and I didn't break down.
Yes.
Where I could talk about it and it didn't make my voice shake and my insides and give me a lump in my throat.
No.
You know, I don't feel any shame from my experience and upbringing. I mean, sure, who wouldn't want things different? But,
and,
like, whatever.
And that's the thing, Susan.
Not living
no
in that
shame.
Anymore.
We were little girls.
Yes,
we were babies.
Of course.
We were babies.
Of course. So it's nice to get to this point of, that's my story. Like, that's it.
I'm liberated.
Yeah, I survived.
Free.
Yeah, for sure.
And you are who you are because of that journey.
Yeah.
Good, bad, ugly, or different.
Always. Yeah. No, it's all good. I'm really glad about it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Dreams and Detours. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe and share it with your friends. You can find me at dreamsdetours.com and at dreamsdetours on Instagram. Thanks for listening.